Hey Joe, I like your show. I tell everybody that's my shit. And if you got a long ride and you like getting high, maybe go and take another hit. We gonna laugh out loud, that's what it's about. Nobody ain't safe no more. And Joe stands out even in a big crowd, cause the motherfucker's 6'4". Hey Joe, it's time to start the show. Up, up and away we go. Mic check and I like your flow. Everybody, here's Joe.
Well, here we are, another episode of the Joe Prano Podcast. I'm very excited for this next one. I have a good friend in the building, a good friend to many of my listeners out there. They know you as my official jingle man. You did the Coosa Comedy jingle, but you've also done so many things. A musician, turned lawyer, turned back into musician, formerly of the band Bad Ronald, Toothpick, Mr. Doug Ray in the house.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Very, very happy to be here on the Joe Prano Podcast. And say what's up to all of our friends out here, man.
So, Doug, we've got you here. Many people have heard your tunes. Many Joe Prano fans have heard your tunes. Your voice probably very, very familiar from the Smash podcast hit, the Kooks jingle, the now defunct Kooks podcast, Rip Kooks.
Kooks of comedy, all-time greats.
But I want to talk to you today because you've already come up on a previous podcast. We talked to your former producer, Sam Hollander, as a guest on the show.
Absolute greatest.
And so I wanted to get you in here and take a tour through the Doug Ray career, because I think it's a fascinating career sort of trajectory that you've had since before I knew you and even since I've known you.
Yeah, it's been interesting. It's been unpredictable. And to be honest, I haven't thought about it, certainly not in order, for a very long time. So it'll be fun to sort of dig through it.
So we'll start from sort of the beginning of where I met you. I met you, I want to say it was like 2002 in that realm.
Pretty very accurate.
Actually, the first time I met you, I think was the first time I met you was summer of 2001. That was like not an unofficial meeting. You were dating a friend of a friend. You were dating a girl as a friend of a friend.
Oh, you guys were about to get into a bar fight.
And we were about to get into
yeah, I do remember.
And you came to the local Katona Bar and Grill.
I did.
And we had an intro. Like we had been set up. It was
if you didn't mention that, I would have never remembered.
And it was
right. Mikey.
Yeah, it was my friend Doug's coming. He's a rapper. And he's got a record coming out, and we were like, oh, and he's coming to Katona Bar and Grill? This should be good.
Yeah.
And and so you show up, you're in a full dark denim outfit.
Sounds
matching,
accurate.
Matching jeans and jacket.
I believe it. I don't remember it, but I believe
it's evening, but you're still wearing wraparound sunglasses.
Fact.
And you had cornrows.
Oh, no. I did. We had done a 2001 style photo shoot at some point where cornrows became what happened. Never take the advice of people who are probably just laughing at you. So that was the lesson learned. But I'm glad it happened because you guys all had a good laugh at my expense. Fortunately, it was before the internet really took hold, so there's no evidence of this.
But at the time, I remember meeting you that day. You were pretty quiet. You know, I feel like maybe you knew exactly, like you knew exactly your state. You're like, what am I doing here at this place? And like you're simultaneously like on the rise, but also at the Katona Bar and Grill.
I was confused by it when we decided to go there because I just thought of it as a place where my dad gets hamburgers after the gym. But
right.
It was packed.
Yeah.
It was pretty much going down enough for us to almost get jumped.
The Katona, me and I feel like myself and my brother and Tony Calabrese and a couple of other people put the Katona Bar and Grill on the map. We
I'm
made
sure.
it something, and then we tore it down simultaneously.
Sounds about right.
But that was my first introduction to you, and then it was kind of like, okay, who is this dude? And then within days of getting introduced to you and being like, oh, the guy with the cornrows at Katona Bar and Grill, that was completely out of place. Literally within days of that, that was when I was in college, still, it might have been summer after my senior year.
I'm
hanging out at home late at night, as we would do. Everybody would come to my house and do some drinking, and we'd just sit around and drink and eat food from 7-Eleven and watch TV. You appeared on my television,
Yeah.
In a legit, well-produced, high-budget music video for Let's Begin, the Bad Ronald song.
Yeah, it was right after I graduated from college and probably started to get airplay like a little bit before that on MTV and stuff. And I too had a few experiences just being someplace random and like seeing it come on TV. It was pretty wild.
So let's rewind a little bit. You're like, give me the whole backstory. Give me everything that leads up to how does Doug Ray from Westchester end up on my TV at 20, what were you, 21 years old?
I was 21, yeah.
At 21 years old in a rap video with models and a dancing condom and bikinis, some old creepy old man in his underwear.
All it, yeah.
The whole thing. It was like a legit night, like a, it was a legit turn of the millennium. Like
It was.
Music video.
We were lucky enough to have Mark Klasfeld direct the video, and he had a lot of really popular videos on that time. It's getting a lot of plays on MTV and wherever else, like Sum 41 and a few, maybe Alien Ant Farm. I can't remember exactly, but there was a lot of stuff going on back then. But how did that happen?
So you grew up, where did you grow up?
I grew up in White Plains, New York, Greenberg, really, which is 20 minutes outside of New York City. And from day one, constantly rapping and carrying on. I think I first started rapping in kindergarten because some of the kids had older brothers who were DJs and knew rap songs, you know, much older brothers. And at one point I used to go to my friend's house after school and his older brother was there. He was in high school. He was a DJ and they would get me to rap and stuff. And they all thought it was pretty funny. And I really just never stopped ever since I was a very little kid, but, also never in a serious band really, or anything too much like that. Until really, Bad Ronald was really my first.
And now I know your brother Brad. I've met him since we've become friends. Was he a hip hop kid? Was he like making you play? Like, was he playing those records around the house?
Absolutely. In fact, so we both loved rap music like from day one, all the way back to obviously all the early Beastie Boys stuff. I had the Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock tape. You guys don't know what tapes are? Google it. And then I had the Slick Rick, Adventures of Slick Rick. I brought it up to Sleepaway Camp. Me and my brother brought it up, and we became heroes because it was a lot of curse words and entertainment on that record. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. I forgot the question.
Just your sort of your introduction to hip-hop. Right. Now,
in high school, one time, my mom was away, so we were home alone. So me and my brother, he was back from his freshman year in college, so I must have been 15 or 16, so we had a huge party. It's like hundreds of kids from high school, from the neighborhood. And right before the party started, my brother called me downstairs and he was like, yo, look. And he set up with my guitars and all my amps and mics and speakers and stuff. Set up all my equipment. He was like, you should play some of these rock and roll songs I hear you play all the time, play at the party. And I was like, I'm never going to do that. Way too scared. But I actually did. I had a couple of drinks and got on the mic and did some raps and played some songs. It was my first show ever. And I loved it. I was very surprised at how easy it was.
Now, I also I've come to know your dad really well. I worked for your dad for a minute.
Ken Ray, the boss.
Me too. I warmed the seat for you before you got in the lawyer in, which we'll talk about later.
Probably your fault that I'm a lawyer.
Yeah.
Think about it, but yeah.
For multiple reasons. Yeah. But your dad was, and your parents, like, were they pro hip hop as like a kid? Were they cool with you guys listening to whatever? Because I know in the 80s and the 90s, that was like a big thing for kids of our generation, especially like white kids. It was like what you can and can't listen to, and explicit advisory lyrics.
So honestly, I think my parents just didn't know to even know that anything could be up.
My parents just didn't give a fuck. This is not our problem.
To be honest, I think they would have cared, and it was possible that there might have been. I think they just gave up fairly quickly because we're just out and we're with friends, and we're like, what are you really going to do? But also, I don't think they were aware, maybe to the extent of some of the violence, or negative talk towards women, You know, it used to be a different.
Two Live Crew and all that.
Things that, and I never really got into any of the extreme stuff, but I certainly knew it was out there. But even some of the more mainstream stuff had some fairly violent or inappropriate for a elementary school student type material. But no, we were rocking it all day long. I had the Sony boombox with detachable speakers. I still have it.
Which you reference in a song on the new Doug Ray album, which we'll talk about later again.
Which I do reference, and it's true. I still have it. And I rocked those tapes all day long. I used to run home from the bus stop to put on rap music, to put on 98.7, I think it was back then. Which
now,
is a sports station now.
White Plains, Greenberg, it sort of splits the difference from where I'm from to New York City. And like for an outsider's point of view, it's like, oh, it's Westchester, it's whatever. But it is a little bit, like even 20 minutes close to the city, it's a little bit more downstate. I'm sure you went to school with black kids and you like had an urban vibe to the high school.
I was very lucky to go to an extremely diverse school, which I didn't even realize until I went to college and people sort of segregate themselves off. But yeah, we just had a full mix of everybody, and it was one big, fun family. It couldn't have been any better.
And was hip-hop part of the scene? Were there kids rapping? Were there kids like freestyling?
It was everybody listened to rap music, and then there was also a lot of kids who listened to rock music, Nirvana and Pearl Jam and all this stuff, which was, I honestly listened to both the maximum amount. I couldn't have been any more into Nirvana and Pearl Jam. Also, all rap music at the time.
Were you freestyling on the like the schoolyard? Were you that kid?
Constant.
Yeah.
So and not just me. There was a lot of kids who were extremely talented. Some who certainly were way more talented than I was or will ever be. That could just freestyle just permanently. And in fact, when I grew up more and left my town more and went to college and got more involved in the music business and touring, after all these years, I kind of look back and go, oh, it turns out like a lot of these kids from my high school were real dope and way better than a lot of the nonsense that came after. Especially DJ White Owl, my friend Aaron, who we grew up together and we were in Bad Ronald together.
So tell me about Bad Ronald. If I recall, you went to SUNY Albany.
Yes.
State University of New York at Albany. And
Working hard.
And so you're there, but you know, you were the same age.
Right.
You were class of 2001.
Yes.
Right as I get out of school, you've got a record deal. So how does that all go down? Like how do you end up with a major label record deal?
So my friend Aaron, who I grew up with, he was a couple of years older than me. He and his younger brother Lee was my best friend, and he was friends with my brother. We were all friends together. He was a DJ White Owl. He still puts out great records. He was a rapper and a DJ and always had access to studios and got himself involved and was just very proactive of inserting himself into the scene and also bringing me along with him, which I'm very grateful for. But we just recorded, he always recorded songs and made records, but he met some folks in the city who ended up being Sam that you spoke with and some of our other friends, and eventually brought me to meet them. And they had been working on some songs before I met them. And then we started all working on some songs together. And our first song that we ever recorded together as Bad Ronald was Let's Begin. That's the song that you saw the video for.
Yep.
Actually, we recorded it right here in Brooklyn in Red Hook. I played it on my electric guitar that I got for my birthday when I was 16 with Kaz, who had a place here, and DJ Detox. That was the band Bad Ronald. There were four of us. So we recorded that song and a few other songs during my senior year. We played a big concert at the Lion's Den.
Okay.
But we had tons of, you know, we were in college at the time. We were just out of high school. We had thousands of friends. So we just packed it out. It must have looked like an extremely famous band was in town because it was sold out and people out in the streets. But we just were in and knew everybody and sort of had everyone come out to a big party as opposed to anyone having ever heard of our band, which was cool. But I think we crushed it, and there was some, honestly, it was a while back, but I think there was some label folks there. I think our producers we ended up working with may have been there, and the managers we ended up working with, and it all went really well. So we recorded a demo. Sam produced the demo. His talent is musical, is amazing, and judgment calls on songs and writing and coming up with hooks and melodies, he's the best, but just as important, a motivator to make you feel like you can do something amazing, to be in the room with you and get you fired up to the level where you actually do bring your A game each time.
He's a very positive fellow.
So positive, but also so genuine.
Yeah.
So he he makes you feel like he believes in you, but it's also because he does believe in you. I don't know, just the best. So he got a great demo out of us, truly. And we got, you know, we met with, I think we met with Donny Einer from Sony Music up in his office over here, I think on Madison Avenue, and it was shenanigans. You know, we were pretty wild and crazy back then, for sure.
You're a college kid.
I was a college kid, and it was going down, and I don't remember it all super crisp,
but right.
We met with some people from Warner Brothers. We took a bunch of label meetings, and we signed with Warner Brothers. It was a great decision. Terrific guy out there, Matt Aberle, signed us to Warner Brothers, and one thing led to another. We recorded the record. They liked it.
Did you graduate from SUNY that year?
I did. There were some arrangements made. I talked with some of my professors, and I was given time to. I was flying back and forth to Los Angeles a lot, recording and just staying. That's a whole other story,
right?
Anyway, but yeah, we did it senior year. We made the record, and actually, when I went up to my college graduation, I was a little bit late getting up there. I was coming back from the city. We had some sort of event. And I actually got the first copy of my record. So I got to sit with my roommates, who I had also gone to high school with. We just had a great crew up there. And we listened to the record for the first time at my college graduation. It was pretty cool. It was fun.
So there's how many people in Bad Ronald?
Four.
Four. And that's Doug Ray.
Doug Ray.
DJ White Owl.
DJ White Owl, who is actually not the DJ in the band. The DJ is DJ Detox.
Right.
Who was in another very cool band called Odd Jobs. And just I got a million good things to say about DJ Detox. Endless talent. He's currently a doctor, like an actual medical doctor.
Wow.
So, yeah, he got it done. And
he's somewhere talking about you on a podcast going, Doug Ray, great guy. He's a lawyer now.
Right.
Got it done.
Right.
If you can believe it.
Right. And the fourth guy was Kaz Gamble. Also did production on the record, a lot of writing, obviously singing and rapping. Very talented. Still does music. Very successfully, and it was just a great bunch of guys. And just as important as the guys in the band, as the four of us, was our team, because it really was a team of people working together on a really fun project. And eventually, you're all just working towards the same thing. It doesn't really matter who's in the band versus who's your manager, which was Andy Mendelsohn and Adam Haft, terrific guys we had so much fun with. And Brett, of course, legendary, and
yeah.
One of my favorite people in the whole world. Brett Deason, and Sam, and Dave Schomer was another producer on the record, who had a long history of successful music business endeavors. It was just a great team. It was so much fun. I would do it again anytime.
So we talked when Sam was in, sort of like there's a very specific, like you can target a famous date, we'll get to there, about like sort of the end, because you know, Sam talked about it, and anybody listening to that episode already knows what I'm talking about. We'll get there.
The end of Bad Ronald, for sure.
Yeah, but how many months between you guys signing and the actual record coming out on that very famous day was there? Like, how long was that process? Because we've talked, you know, being old friends now, I've heard...
Probably a year.
Okay. So that's a year of making the record... Really making it, traveling to Los Angeles. Did you guys tour for the record time?
You know, let me say this. It's really not accurate to say that it ended on that date,
mm-hmm.
that terrible date, because we toured a ton after that.
Right.
And honestly,
sort of the beginning of the end, I guess, is
it was
the
beginning of the end commercially,
yeah.
In terms of like the label and, you know, being on television. And
so we'll just get to it. We'll September 11th. Is September 11, 2001 is when your album comes out.
Right.
And Sam talked about it. September 10th at midnight, you guys are down at Union Square. They got a poster of the Bad Ronald album, like huge billboard. It's a whole
everywhere.
Shenanigan.
Right at the Virgin Megastore, yeah.
But prior to that, we've talked a lot about it. It seems like the run up to that is almost the most exciting part of the whole thing, because there's so much...
It
unknown.
Was.
How big are we? That's when you're doing things like giving yourself cornrows and going to the Katona Bar and Grill like your Puff
Correct.
Daddy.
And doing things that you can't imagine. But like lots of mistakes and also lots of good moves, it turned out. And I will say this. We went hard. We didn't think we were super cool. We didn't think we were about to become the Beatles. We were like, yo.
You were like, free money.
Yeah, we're like, yo, and free opportunity. So when we tour, we're going to tour hard. And we, honestly, it was the 4 or 5 months leading up to the, you know, over that summer and leading up to that September, we were just doing, we were on all national radio. So we were doing, you know, radio festivals, 50, 60,000, 100,000 people, which might as well be everybody because it's just
right.
Huge shows. And, you know, obviously with all the, lots of other very artists, popular right. bands that we were able to open for and stuff, but just taking advantage of every opportunity, partying hard. I don't remember sleeping. We never came home. We multiple shows a day, just living on the road.
Were you guys traveling via like tour bus?
Every possible way. Every tour possible bus, way. Planes, vans.
How was that for essentially a bunch of college kids to be on a, you know, a national tour, like with
just
each
like
other,
flying around and being cool with tour managers and the whole
fun. It was like incredible. You guys yeah. are all getting along.
Yeah. Well, for the most part, I mean, like yeah. like any other road trip, when you know, right. like, there are glamorous moments and there are horrible moments, but for the most part, yeah, getting along and having a great time and not taking it for granted, I'm sure. And along the way, by accident, meeting a ton of great musicians and writers and performers and just people and being there for the beginning of relationships that ended up lasting so far a lifetime, including meeting you at that time.
Yeah.
And just being in places all around the country that I'd never been before, going to every single city and making friends. And it's the other bands that are the best because you play music after the show and it's always fun to go up and do a rap with the headliner and you end up making friends and then you end up writing songs together and working on projects together. It was the best.
Do you have a moment that stands out during that time where you were someplace in particular, or you were doing someplace in particular, or you were performing where you said like, oh, this is my life for the future and this is incredible and this is what I want. This is like, this is my moment. Like, is there a moment where you're like, this was my peak?
I'll tell you what was interesting one time. I was at college at SUNY Albany, upstate in New York. And I was hurrying up to finish a paper for some sort of nonsense, trying to get that D so I could get the credit, which is ridiculous. And really,
give me that D.
It's just me and this, it's really just this girl from my class, like writing it. And we're actually still friends. She was very nice. And she was like helping me write it. And I was like, yeah, you know, it's not even due yet, but I got to fly out later tonight. And I was at my college and you know, it was before we had started getting more on the radio, at least where my college was, and before our video came out. And we flew out to do some sort of a radio show somewhere. I believe it was Louisville, Kentucky. There was like a lot of bands playing. And we weren't opening. We were about right in the middle there. It was nighttime. And there was as many people as you could see. And all these famous bands were there. And I was like, oh, this is going to be so awkward. We should have opened. You know, we're so random. And these kids knew the song that was like our first song, Let's Begin. And we played that song first, which we thought might have been a good idea to get them on our team. And they started playing the song. And the kids knew all the words. And I was like, how is that? But it was the maximum amount of people. And I guess the big radio station in that town was playing it on their rock station, even though it was a rap song. And I was like, this is pretty crazy. And they're kind of, these kids are going nuts. And then they truly went nuts. Because, you know, our show was a very high energy. We were rapping. We were getting after it, and we put on a big show. And for we couldn't hang out at the festival. That was our first experience with that, where we can't go watch the rest of the show because it will create a situation. And I was like, wow, that's pretty unusual. And then that was my first time experiencing that. It was pretty fun.
Now that brings us right up to the one where we met, and that's the summer, and I remember watching the video, and this is having met you a couple days before and having been like, this guy's not a, like, who calls himself a rapper? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
I met him. He's not a rapper.
Right.
And then I saw it. I'm like, he's a rapper. Yeah. Like, this is a rap group. And I remember watching the video and thinking, it's patently ridiculous, the whole video, but fun as shit. And thinking, like, you know what? A lot of people over the years have tried to like have this Beastie Boys vibe or have this like, we're fun, we're young, we're crazy. And one thing that video does is say like, we're young, we're fun, we're crazy. Like you're on board or you're not. And you guys fucking nailed it. And
thanks, man.
And I made you bring your instrument today because I told you I'm going to make some requests. Can right. you, for anybody that didn't, that wasn't part of the summer of 2001 massive radio airplay of Let's Begin, can you give us a little taste of what that was like?
I can. So hold on.
I prepped you for this, and you said you might have to Google lyrics for things.
I'm going to Google it. I just need that. I just need those first line words of each line. So hold on a second.
Now, when you guys do this, you're all splitting. How many, like,
I'm Googling it.
When you guys do these tracks, you're all like, do you guys all take a verse? Is that kind of how it goes? And is that like planned?
You know what? We did it very organically. Just each song is different. It was very whatever.
Yeah.
Like, this chorus, I think me and DJ White Owl sort of like said every other line. Like, it was a very, we did it very much together, which makes it fun.
And is there any, during the process at all, was there ever any like, oh no, that's too much Doug, that's too much DJ White Owl, that's not enough me? That's,
you know, like, what? We were lucky that along the process, everybody wanted to do what was the best thing, but also, you know, we all sort of knew what it was that we were supposed to be doing in, because of our natural abilities in the band. So, like, a lot of times DJ White Owl's verse would be like way longer, and I'm like, yeah, well, he's crushing it.
Right.
So good. Like, so, you know, it worked out.
Everybody's on the same team. I like it. All right, give us a little bit of Let's Begin.
All right, this is super random and never been performed on acoustic guitar before, but I'm holding, but I'm about to cop some more. I'm real high because I smoked a lot before. So what you stopping for? Keep passing by. Smoke good weed, get a long-lasting high. Know it might be right, I know it might be wrong. If I'm going to have a drink, it might as well be strong. It's not the beginning and it's not the end. We're going to pass the shit around, you can hit it again. Let me be young, live life while I can. And get the wrong idea, what I actually am. It's like a flash in the pan. So hold on tight, catch a little buzz. And everything'll be alright. We're gonna light the weed, tap the cake, shoot the shit. Now let's begin. We gonna kick right back. We gonna sit right down. Enjoy it, girl. You gonna love the sound.
I like it. I like it. That's not truly the first. You've rocked that a couple times on the acoustic guitar, once or twice, and then at a toothpick show.
No, I mean, it's my first time rocking on the acoustic guitar. I played it on the electric guitar.
Yeah,
so it's just the same. Yeah.
That was great. Thank you.
No problem.
And, you know, this is sort of the beginning.
I mean, I'll be honest also, I'm thinking, I don't think I've played that song in front of another human in like 10 years. And I messed with it to see if it would work to transform into my new record, like a little bit with Blaze, my drummer, earlier this year. And we were like, no, it's not going to work.
Right. And this is sort of like the early stages of the Joe Prano podcast. This is for people who are listening to this now. I'm sort of stockpiling New York episodes with some New York friends while I'm here. And that was what I had to do there is I held the mic to your mouth and I held the mic to your guitar. I think it worked out perfectly.
It worked out very well.
One day when we're in a massive studio and we have a guitar mic, that'll be a lot easier for you.
Yeah, but actually, I think that's how the Beatles recorded all their records. The guy stood there with two mics.
That's how they got the wall of sound.
Yeah,
it was Phil Spector, yeah. And he had a bunch of young girls, and he was like, "You all hold mics by their instruments."
Yeah.
All right. So, like I said, we talked about it with Sam, but the record's supposed to come out September 11th, 2001.
Right.
We all know what happened that day. He talked about you guys are down there at the record store, midnight release.
Yep.
There's a whole party. You're all having fun. It's the best thing ever. Where do you wake up September 11th, 2001 in the morning?
So I wake up in Brooklyn at my friend's place. My other buddy's girlfriend wakes us up, tells us to turn on the TV. And like anybody else, I don't really want to go too deep into the day.
Yeah.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
But essentially, obviously, the music and what we were supposed to be doing was the last thing on my mind and on everyone's mind. But eventually the day became night and we sort of thought, okay, well, we're supposed to be flying somewhere. I wonder if that's happening, et cetera. And I guess all the flights had been grounded. So we very quickly realized that things were going to be put on hold for the entire country. And obviously the tragedy was devastating. Whatever inconvenience we may have experienced, it doesn't matter and doesn't even apply compared to obviously what so many people experienced, especially in New York. And if you were in New York at that time, everybody knows everybody who was affected, and it still isn't better all these years later. And I don't think it ever will be feeling any better, but it was rough. So a few days later, we were actually on one of the early flights out of Islip on Long Island. And that's a funny story because we brought a lot of props with us. DJ White Owl very intelligently was able to find a lot of different ways to raise up the level of entertainment during our shows. So at one point, we just had a couple of suitcases of just props, like, super suspicious looking
like
stuff.
Like what kind of props?
So if anybody flew on any flights right after September 11th, they put all your stuff out on a table and searched it right in front of you because they didn't really have a protocol.
There wasn't this TSA situation,
right,
body
it wasn't
scanners.
As sophisticated yet, especially yeah. not out in Islip. So the first thing
they're
that you
still
pull
doing,
out of
they're still doing that in Islip.
Okay, so they put the big black suitcase on the table. The guy's got his gloves on. He opens the suitcase, and it had been like stuffed into the suitcase with props. So as soon as he opens it up, a big, I want to say 4-foot stuffed animal style, pink colored furry penis with balls springs out. And then, you know, I guess I didn't, but it would be paraded around on stage with or without all band member approval and other silly items. And the TSA guy, or whatever the equivalent was at the time, was, you know, super confused and like made him even want to dig through our stuff even more. Anyway, it was an interesting flight.
Yeah. So how, like, you know, I talked to Sam about it, but also I know multiple people who were affected professionally yeah. in the same way that you guys were. A good friend, Chris Wilde, had the Chris Wilde show on Comedy Central. No longer does anybody want, you know, frosted blonde tips doing wacky humor on Comedy Central. It's like, it's not what we're called for. Comedy, they took a break. I mean, people, yeah. everybody remembers when Letterman came back. There was a long, significant time. SNL came back. It also did the opposite for other people. A lot of sappy, sad, maybe even New York-friendly songs that weren't necessarily good became
right.
the best thing that ever happened. Like, I'm a U2 fan, but like there was a couple U2 songs where it was like, I guess this is the only thing we're allowed to play on the radio for a while.
Right. That did happen, and the only way I think I felt about it at the time and still do was, you know what, fine. Like, if there is anything that's making people feel better, and whatever my reaction to that is, professionally or otherwise, it's worth it because everybody feels so terrible. But on a personal level, of course, like anybody else, I was disappointed that our super hardcore party bananas record no longer applied.
Right. Now, what, like, was there a moment where you were actually like, this could have a major effect on us? Or were you like, everybody's going to be sad for a while, but it's not going to be forever? And at some point, like, we did come back. We are drinking. I am drinking beer and smoking weed again, like,
well,
and tapping the keg. Like,
so it coincided with a little bit of the beginning of some of the band members having a little bit of a different music path,
mm-hmm.
not in really a negative way. Just that's very natural. And it wasn't like we were the biggest band on the planet to where if we broke up, it was this big tragedy. So we did end up touring the rest of the summer. We had a great time. But we didn't make another Bad Ronald record.
And were you contracted to make another Bad Ronald record? Or was it a one record deal?
We had a two record deal. It's a long,
legal
story
yeah.
of getting out of the deal and settlements and different things. But it worked out. It worked out well. Yeah. It worked out well enough to be able to invest in doing the time, by the way, not the money. Didn't
right.
get money.
Right.
Let me be clear. But invest myself fully in doing the toothpick project.
Right.
Rather than trying to continue to work on a project that everybody wasn't all the way bought into.
So how quickly after kind of, like, I think Sam said they pull tour support and then, like, it's a slow process. But, like, how quickly after that does everybody, because I've hung out with you. I think I've met Kaz once.
Right.
Maybe at a toothpick show.
Right.
I don't think I've met any. I don't think I've met DJ White Owl. Probably I don't not. Think. Like, how quickly does everybody go scatter and go their separate ways?
Well,
because you went from being a band that all knew each other to all be together all the time to somebody that, like, as one of your best friends, I don't even know these people.
Okay, right. So part of it was proximity,
right?
In that, I think Detox, the DJ, went back on and was touring and playing music with Odd Jobs, his prior band, which was great. And we never, none of us ever lost touch. And Detox and I think we still speak sometimes, not as often as I'd like to, but I think that's the case with a lot of friends. But there was a little bit of an uncomfortable breakup when everyone doesn't have the same ideas about what they want to do with the band. At the time, it was a little bit uncomfortable. Obviously, we don't all make music together anymore, so that's a little bit disappointing. But Kaz moved out to Massachusetts, and then he moved to California. And I did actually make some more songs and do more music with Kaz for a long time after Bad Ronald and with DJ Detox. DJ White Owl and I did not make more music together because there was just... It had been an intense experience, and it was probably a good idea to give each other some space for a little while, which we did. And but he did continue to make outstanding rap music. He's a great rapper.
So that's at the point where you start doing Toothpick.
Right.
And Toothpick is essentially a Doug Ray solo project.
Yes.
That you... also worked on with Sam and all the Pop Rocks dudes and that this almost basically the same entire production crew.
Yeah, Sam definitely produced it and did a lot of writing, co-writing, and
Sam said on his appearance on the show that you know after the whole Bad Ronald thing blows up, he goes, there was something about Doug Ray and charisma and he's a real front man and whatever, and he wants to keep working with you. And
that's
really when we started, proper hanging out. I had an apartment on 20th Street.
Yep.
You would often come over. You'd stay on the couch.
Yes.
You, much to the dismay of Pete Einerson, who's actually paying to live there.
Right.
And he would get up and go to a financial job and leave the two of us playing NBA Live for steaks at L'Express.
Right, 100%.
And that was really where you wrote the Toothpick album, the Toothpick record. You're back and forth between sort of my place, your parents' place in Westchester. I remember at the time you're doing the Orange Bear open mic.
Yeah,
started
from scratch playing open mics. I hadn't been playing guitar on stage. I had been rapping with the DJ and stuff, so I wanted to just start 100% from scratch, which was tough. That summer, I'm pretty sure Michael Tolcher,
mm-hmm,
our great friend, an amazing musician and singer and songwriter, was also recording a record with Sam and with the Pop Rocks guys in the city. And we all met, I think, at the same time, actually.
Yeah.
I think the day I met Michael is the day we first came by your apartment.
Yeah, yeah. And then you never left.
Right.
Michael left.
Michael left. I stayed.
No, I just actually, my favorite part of that whole thing is, Pete, who was my roommate, was... he had music aspirations. He's a big music fan. He would play the open mic that you played all the time.
Yep.
And my favorite thing about Pete, he's a very competitive guy, and he was very competitive when we played high school sports together. He's competitive in video games. He's a competitive guy. And I remember you bringing Michael over, and he was trying to get some stuff that we all were trying to get our hands on back in the day. And I brought over a mutual friend who had those things. And we're talking about it, and he's going, well, I'm here to make a record.
Shout out to Veal.
Yeah, shout out to Veal. We're talking about it, and you said, oh, he's here making a record.
Right.
And Pete's going like, let's get this motherfucker to play something so that tomorrow I can be like, that guy's making a record. What a jerk off.
Right.
And he plays and he starts playing a song, and I'm like, this is really good.
The greatest.
It's great.
Right.
He's got a fantastic voice. He's killing the guitar. He's playing his own drum on the guitar while he's playing it. And I'm looking at Pete
Can I just pause for a second?
Yeah.
Let me set the scene here. It's very rare that you're in an apartment with a bunch of bros in New York City, and like, we're all hanging out, and everyone's like, oh, can this guy grab his acoustic guitar and like serenade us?
Yeah. But and we Pete's like, I got a guitar. Let's see what you can do.
Right. So it was an unusual situation. We were all prepared to
He didn't want to do it. He's like, nah.
He didn't want to do
it
at all.
Play something.
Right.
So Pete is forcing him because Pete wants to not like it.
Right.
And I can, and I'm trying to look at Pete's face to see, is he regretting this now? Because it's pretty good.
Right.
Now he's going to have to admit, like, it's pretty good.
So it was set up to be the most awkward situation of all
time. It was already awkward.
Greatest.
And it was fantastic.
Right.
And I'm looking at Pete, and he's stone-faced watching. And then the song ends, and Pete, but we all, Pete's the one that's forced this into him. We all look at him, and he goes, you sing like an angel.
Yeah, exactly. And then he tried to get up, and we're like, whoa, yeah. More songs. Where
yeah,
are you going?
Yeah. And Michael just put out a record as well. He just put out another record after.
He did.
Yeah.
Elemental. Go check it out. It's online. It's everywhere. He's touring this summer with REO Speedwagon in Chicago, I think.
Yep.
I think we're going to do a show together down on the Jersey Shore. He never stops and has constantly putting out great songs.
But that's where I really got my first taste of Doug Ray, of Toothpick, you're playing songs. What was it like going from, now, if I have it right, it's sort of the opposite of like the Bad Round. Like you were then having to, you were coming from nothing, you were starting with open mics, you're now kind of like entering the music business the way the normal person would enter the music business.
For sure. Although, admittedly, having some good relationships and friends and having a little bit of a foundation and some
So fans. There's already people that know about you. Now you've just got to go, like, I can do it.
Right.
What was it like playing the Toothpick? What was it like going down to open mics and playing that stuff for the first time?
It was humbling playing for six people on midnight on Thursday nights.
Within 18 months of playing for festivals.
Within 6 months.
Yeah.
And 6 months later, we were playing big stadium concerts on tour again. So it was a real roller coaster. And I will say, corny as it sounds, it's obviously the best thing that could have ever happened to me. Because when you're 20, I think I was 20 when I got signed, and you're at college, and you're immediately on, you know, all the top radio stations, and you're on MTV, and you think you're pretty cool. It's good to get a little reminder that you're not that cool and that nobody cares. So you better bring something real.
And yeah. I got to say, as somebody who is just out of college in New York, chasing the comedy dream, basically doing the same thing you were doing, doing open mics of comedy and doing whatever, it was a real almost cinematic experience, like the way it's portrayed, like all these artists are hanging out. It was like that, you
right.
know? It's like you're doing music, I'm doing comedy. Calabrese is coming back from like playing professional baseball.
Right. It was such a great crew.
We got another musician who's like dabbling in finance. It was like one of those real moments where it's like, that's what, you know, sort of other people go like, what are 20-somethings doing in New York? It's like, yeah, we were doing it.
Yeah,
like,
it was
we were
great.
Going for it. And just going down and supporting you guys at the Orange Bear and watching those songs come to life is like one of my favorite, you know, times of my life. To the point where Toothpick becomes a record. I'm in the music video.
Right.
You're going on tour.
Yeah.
Your whole Bad Ronald experience of all these tour managers and support is now just Joe Prano and a slight drinking problem in a
Honda
Civic.
One of the that's right. One of the first Toothpick tours, I was opening for Ziggy Marley.
Yep.
Great tour, like House of Blues type venue. Actually, they were mostly House of Blues.
Mostly House of Blues,
and
yeah.
Similar type venues down south, Florida. We were all over the place. That was a great tour. Joe, you were there the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. I mean, lots of fun things
lots
on that.
Of fun.
But I'll tell you the few fun, really really fun moments that stick out for me from that.
Okay,
that
but go easy on me.
Yeah, no, mostly me. The first one was you asked me to do it. I had quit working at CBS and was sort of doing freelance production in, you know, kind of general freelance production.
Right.
And part of it was, you know, I'll come, I'll film it, maybe we'll do something with it, you know, maybe we'll make a little tour thing. This is before you're actually like signed.
Right.
And the electronic
press
kit.
Which, by the way, the video that we made essentially is the reason we got signed.
Yeah. And that was going to be a fun thing. I'm going to dabble in production a little bit. It's like a sort of like, you know, that music production kind of thing. But what really kind of put the nail in the coffin is like I'm going was I was out with friends, got into a bar altercation, got beat up drunkenly, woke up.
Potato chips.
Woke up, was very beat up, barely remember it.
Yep.
And
this is the day before we leave.
It's like, it's a couple days before we leave. I was like, you know what? I need to get out of here. Like, I need a time off. I'm drinking too much. I'm carousing too much. I'm getting into bar fights.
And a very important part of you coming along
was we were going to split the driving.
The driving. Split it, splash, just do it.
Yeah.
More if I'm. You know what I mean?
You're going to be playing the shows. I'll help drive.
Right.
I'll do the whole thing. So you take the first shift somewhere around Virginia or Maryland. You're like, all right, let's swap out. You'll take the next shift. I get in. 10 minutes later, you're like, I can't do it. I can't look at your ear anymore. It's disgusting. It looks like a peeling potato chip of scabbiness.
It was bad. Joe's left side of ear / back of the head is pretty well beaten up. And it was gross, and I just didn't want to look at it anymore. And I was like, I'm fucking driving.
And you literally drove. I drove for almost the rest of the trip.
Yeah, pretty much, including sidebar, or just side story. I'm sorry, it's being an attorney again, but at some point we're driving in what's got to be either a tornado or something similar to it.
Yep.
Remember this?
Yeah,
driving back.
This is on the way back. Yeah,
and it's the middle of the day, but it's pitch black out, like it's the middle of the night.
Yep.
And we can't see a foot in front of us. The only thing we can see, as far as we know, is two lights on what's obviously some big Mack truck or something way up ahead of us. And we're like, should we pull over? Because how can we possibly be driving in this? It's impossible to see anything. And we're like, you know what? We'll just follow this truck. Like, if it's a truck, we'll be safe. And this goes on for like a half hour, and it's extremely dangerous, and stuff is blowing over the highway. And eventually it passes, and we get up to the truck, and it turns out the truck is a tiny, tiny, tiny little car with a tiny little old lady in it who led us through the storm.
Who was pacing us the whole time.
We couldn't believe it. Like that, she's so much braver than us. Yeah. It was great.
If it weren't for her, we would have definitely pulled over.
For
and
sure.
She was going, and there was nobody in front of her.
No, she was the only other human out there. So that was kind
of my other favorite part of our drive was, this is pre-GPS on your phone. This is pre-Waze. Every day we would, in fact, I think you did it in advance. You like printed every...
Carrie Gelber, the world's greatest manager, would politely print out packets.
Print out packets of what was the map?
MapQuest. Oh my god!
MapQuest directions, and I'd pull them out every day, and I'd have the.
In case my sister listens, that's where you used to get the directions on the computer ahead of time,
because
you didn't have it in your pocket.
And you would print them out, and you'd print out a map with a step by step directions, essentially exactly what your GPS does now, but like you were stuck with it. This is the way you're going,
right?
And we're driving from somewhere to like Fort Lauderdale.
We were driving from somewhere to Orlando.
Orlando,
Rich Nice was there when we got there.
Right. And we're in terrible traffic. We can't follow these map. If we follow these MapQuest directions, we're not making it.
Right, we're not going to make the show.
So we do the 2002 version of Waze, which is we get my mom on the phone and Prano to pull up the computer. She pulls up a map.
Yep.
She's finding an alternate route.
Make a left here. Get a left here.
And
she did manual human.
We had a
ways.
Human Siri. She's like, left turn at.
Yeah.
And she's telling us. And my favorite part is, I'm driving.
Yep.
And she takes us to a back road in Florida somewhere. And if we're gonna make it, we have to break the law. Like we're going 90.
In the construction lane, just in the
90 down a one way, down a two lane road. In the middle of Florida, and she's going, and she's like, in 2 miles, you know. But she's pacing her directions like we're going the speed limit.
Right.
So she's like, you're going to see a road, Everglades Drive or whatever. And you're like, Everglades Drive! And it comes up, and I essentially like lock up the brakes and make a left turn at like 60. And
smoking the whole
smoking
time.
Tires. And then we're letting out vocal like, oh no, this is not good.
Right.
And she's on the phone going like, what's happening? We're like, we almost missed the turn. And we somehow made it to the House of Blues in Orlando in time.
We made it.
And that's where we met Rich Nice.
Right. Rich Cronin, Rich Nice.
Formerly of LFL.
The greatest.
Yeah.
Just not enough good things to say. But
and then you were on that tour. You were on that tour with Ziggy Marley, which was.
Well, so that's why, that was incredible. It was just incredible. His band he and his band and their entire crew welcomed us into their, essentially into their family from day one.
Straight up Jamaican
the
dudes. Rasta.
And including, band. I believe, some of his band members were some of the Wailers.
Yeah.
Some Bob Marley's
and drummer. Two white kids from Westchester.
Yeah. And they
bring in better reefer, honestly.
We had better weed.
Yeah. They had some Jamaican shaking.
They did, but... Dude, they put on a heck. They packed every venue, obviously, and put on just an incredible show. And were so great to welcome us and have us out. But that was really the beginning of Toothpick taking off.
Yep. And I remember we put together a great electronic press kit for you from that tour.
Yep.
And I picked two songs off of that. You played First Time.
First Time.
And I took two live cuts of it, and then I overlaid like just a lot of tour footage.
Yeah.
And then I think, not even arguably, I think almost officially, I took everybody's favorite song from the Toothpick album. The song I think that really spoke the most about who you were at the time and really talked about like kind of what it was like to be early 20-something in that time of life, and that was High Life.
Play at the Hooters when we left Orlando. I brought my guitar into a Hooters upon request, or maybe I requested it of myself.
Yeah, yeah.
But they loved it.
They loved it.
We made some friends.
And it was great. And I think, you know, I don't want to say it was ahead of its time because it's like kind of like happening at the same time, but like to me, that like the High Life could have just as easily been like the college song with Asher Roth, you know, like it was everything that you wanted. And kids, the next round, when kids started to know that song,
they loved it.
People went crazy.
They did.
So and I'm going to make you do it again. Are you going to play some High Life?
I will. Yeah. And I will say this is, this one's been a while. So I'm stalling a little here. Cause what I'm going to do is Google it because I don't know the words. I'm actually going to bring this up on my phone. Here we go. Oh, boy. Here you go. Well, I remember when I lived for candy and cartoons. I also remember the first time I ate shrooms. It was me, Little John, Chris Begare, and Joe. We all ate and ate at a Grateful Dead show. Joe told me in slow motion it feels so good. Then he turned into Peter Pan and flew into the woods. I found a VW bus with the keys inside, and I could see just enough to take it for a joyride. I started in New York, ended up in L.A. Thought it took 10 minutes, but it took 10 days. I stayed for 2 weeks, made love with two freaks. When they found out I was 17, they made me leave. That's the High Life. Got no regrets, I do fucked up shit. Get high and forget, it's so out of control. It's all disrespect. I might say sorry, then I do it again. That's the High Life.
Fantastic.
These are little
I wish I could have gotten more High Life, just because I think one of the great lines in music history is about wanting to come back and just fuck high school girls.
I'm not busy. I can scroll down if you want to get it. Come on back.
Let's do it. Give everybody the line of the record.
There was a little hesitation there because my screen timed out, but you have to click to get the full lyrics. Here we go. Well, I used to steal lollipops, candy, and gum. Sold them two for 50 cents in the back of the bus. I was an entrepreneur, from blow plops to blow to t-shirts with Nancy Reagan saying, just say no. Plus, picture me cutting your grass in army fatigues, chopping down trees till someone pay me to leave. Then I show up at your house, drunk on a lawnmower, honk the horn and tell your mom it's cool to be sober. I dare you to keep kids off drugs, cause life sucks when you're stuck in the suburbs with a backwards hat driving a truck. And the smart kids go to college to change the world. Then all they want to do is come home and fuck high school girls. That's the High Life. Got no regrets, I do fucked up shit. Get high and forget, so out of control. It's all disrespect. I might say sorry, then I do it again. They go throw the little ticket in the back of the drawer. Tell the judge don't pay me no mind. Throw the little pink ticket in the back of the drawer, cause I'll be out in 6 days with a fine. That's the High Life. skipped a bunch there at the end.
Yeah, that's good though.
Because my screen.
You know
time,
what? I mean, the purpose of the whole thing, the purpose of this whole podcast, not just with you, but in general, is to promote artists and artists I like and artists I feel like people. It's easy to listen to Maren and listen to him with, you know, Jennifer Lawrence on and be like, I've heard of that. But like, I want people to go out and find it. So like, I don't want you to give them the whole thing. I want people to go out and download the Toothpick record and we'll get into, you know, hell, go back and get the Bad Ronald record. I'm sure Doug still gets a couple cents off of that if you buy it. Stream it.
I don't think anybody's bought it, so I wouldn't know.
And then, of course, we'll talk about your other record. But so Toothpick happens. You toured with OAR.
Yep.
Toured with the Robert Randolph Band.
Yep.
What's it like when you're – because the difference between – and I always thought it was amazing. The difference between Bad Ronald and Toothpick was you're a band, and now you're a guy.
Right.
And you're opening – as just a dude, for OAR, how many people are in OAR?
Probably five or six.
Yeah, like they're
the best guys.
They're like a legit, like they have a whole thing.
Yeah, very big production. That was actually a very huge tour, like the stadium tour.
Yep.
It was long. I remember that, which was great. I would have went forever. It was the best time,
yeah.
Honestly.
Now, what's it like opening up? When you go out there before a big band with a rabid audience, mm-hmm. they're all there to hear, you know, a crazy game of poker. That's all they want. You're just killing time before the song about cards.
Right.
And you're just a guy with a guitar.
Well, I'll
and
say
a
this.
Fucking wristband.
It wasn't exactly that I had to win everybody over from scratch because I had been playing in a lot of those areas for a while, so that helped. But also, the OAR guys really were just extraordinary. They took me under their wing. We were on the same label. We had the same manager, I think, at the time, was co-managing me. So I was very much welcomed into the community, so that was extremely helpful. But also, I think what we were doing, and I guess I'm saying we, but it was kind of just me standing up there, but it was very digestible because it was just me and an acoustic guitar, nothing else, no tracks or nothing. And I was just rapping to people. I think they dug it. They seemed to dig it. We sold a ton of records and it ended up being great. And that tour was great because it led to a lot of other tours because we started to get taken more seriously with the project. And it was great. It felt good. It felt good to go lose everything just as fast as it had been given to us and then going out and being given nothing and having to earn it. And I understand that it's easy to get a little bit of a head start when you get to start with your first tour with Ziggy Marley. And obviously we had some opportunities that were there that might not be, that can't be taken for granted. But
so, and I think anybody that watched it and anybody that heard it at the time thinks this is great. I love it. This guy's talented. But so take me to sort of like, what is the wind down of Toothpick? And like, how does, you know, is it just you hit a certain peak of success and then it just didn't keep going from the next level?
Toothpick was lucky because we did get a bunch of radio play. Certainly Kid Chris helped a ton and local markets and college radio. And we had some leftover relationships with people who were great and played the record. So that helped. And we played a ton of college shows. There's an organization called NACA that booked a lot of college shows for us. So we were able to continue to build it for a long time.
I like you say us because it's just you and your guitar.
Well, but after the first few tours, we actually did add
a band. Yeah.
So I was playing with a bass player and a drummer. And the drummer on a lot of those tours, and now I'll really only play with him because it's so much, it's just great, is Blaze Money, Blaze Lanzetta. He's in my current band. So it was, and we'd have, you know, a merch person and a manager. Yeah. So it was like a team, but yeah. And we'd sprinkle in, because sometimes it's easier to get an opener if you're just playing alone, because mm-hmm. they don't want you just setting up your whole mess. But so there were shows where I'd play solo acoustic, and those guys would just get trashed, so that worked.
Yeah.
but it was pretty great. But we did a bunch of touring. How did it wind down, I guess, was for whatever reason, I didn't write another record. So we had toured on the Drive Easy Toothpick record for even 2 years, I think. And I wanted to I honestly, I'm not exactly sure why I decided that it was. I was on the road for a long time.
Yeah,
there was a lot of bus living and van living,
and it was like you had living. You sort of had to do that to support it. It wasn't to the point where it was supporting itself on its own. You couldn't then take off a couple months from being on the road, and
right?
Then,
we
and
had
just
to
selling
tour
records
constantly, and right. we did for years.
And it's almost
maybe
like
3 years on yeah, one record.
It's almost like nowadays you go, you do that. Those people hear it like. They don't have to come and find you after the show and buy a CD or go to a Sam Goody. Like, they can just, like, if you go and you see a concert now and the opener's dope, you can put their song on your Apple Music or on your Spotify while you're watching it.
Right.
And I remember, I mean, I was obviously there pre the CD, like, my tour managing career for you was pre the actual physical CD, but I know, right. I know you were out there slinging discs
yeah,
to
lots,
kids
lots.
Post show.
For sure, yeah. We sold a ton of CDs. I was very happy to be out there pushing them because we needed to sell CDs to pay for hotels, and I needed to pay the band guys' salaries and so that they could afford to come live on the road, and we needed to eat, and we needed to party very hard
yep.
and travel. It worked. It used to be able to sell CDs and support a medium size. There was a AAA back then.
And if anybody wants to go watch the Time Traveling Couch video,
it's probably online.
It's online. I know it is for sure. Okay. And it's on my resume. I put myself. It's on my resume. I'm in it as a couch pioneer because I'm the first one that actually takes the couch to a different time.
Perfect.
Which was hilarious. You made a video for that. So then.
Well, Toothpick also winded down because right around the time that I, and we had been writing songs all along and playing, you know, when I say we were touring for years on the same record, we weren't just playing the same eight songs for you. We had tons of songs. It was
yeah.
great. We didn't end up going and recording all of them, but we had a lot of stuff. So by the time we really did get back to New York and I was going to record it, I was spending a lot of time with Rich.
Right.
Rich Cronin. Rich Nice, and we ended up, I can't remember, we cut, the first song that we cut together was Life Goes On, and
right.
I believe it was going to be for my Toothpick record or for his solo record, I don't know which one it was, but we liked it, and we had a lot of fun making it, and so we made a few more songs, and we were like, all right, well, let's just do a whole record,
yeah,
and that's how the Loose Cannon.
And finished. Rich Cronin, we mentioned it before, was from LFO, everybody knows him as Abercrombie and Fitch guy.
Yeah,
he's the good looking blonde kid that likes to wear Abercrombie and Fitch and Chinese food
hates,
made him sick.
Hates Chinese.
Yeah,
and he did hate Chinese food.
Yeah, and he dated Jennifer Love Hewitt. And what's funny is you and I, when we went and saw him, when we played your Toothpick tour, he came out to support you
in Orlando.
Got so drunk, was doing the handsprings in the parking
lot.
Broke his arm.
Right. We were supposed the story that Joe told. About us driving down to Orlando in oncoming traffic. When we got there, Rich Nice was there with
yeah.
his girlfriend at
yep.
the time. It was great. I knew Rich from New York, but we weren't super close back then because he was off doing his touring and we hadn't really spent tons of time. But we were very excited to regroup in Orlando and have a big party. I think Mike, his brother, Mike Cronin,
yeah, yeah.
was going to be with us. And we were going to have a big party and it was all going to go down. He got fired up because he's the greatest.
Was drinking Red Bull vodkas at a pace unseen to man prior to that.
Correct.
Yeah.
And was doing the worm in the parking lot
yep, yep.
after the show.
And it had been raining.
And he
slipped in the water and he broke his arm. And he went down. And this is the first of twice that Rich did this on my watch was he was like, I fucked up my arm. But like then days later... He's like, I broke my arm.
Right.
I'm in a cast. It's
right.
really bad. Like,
yeah.
whatever. And I remember driving away from that being like, oh, man, that guy's a fucking lunatic.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't long after that that actually your production team sent me down to Florida to film Rich for an entire weekend as a pilot for what became Mission Man Band,
yeah.
Taking a bunch of ex-boy band members and putting them together. And I filmed Rich... I wish I had this footage, but 72 hours of nonstop, constant filming of Rich.
Get yourself
Nice.
A drink at the bar.
Yeah. Nonstop filming of Rich talking. What a hilarious guy.
The best.
And the whole time, he's got a flu. He's sick. but he's pressing on. He's not going to not drink just because he's not feeling well. And the whole, but it's a struggle for him. And he's like, dude, I can't believe this. You're down here when I fucking got sick, and this is awful. And he goes hard the whole weekend, and he's got some flu. And then just like his broken arm, we became very close on that weekend. A week later, he goes, I didn't have the flu. I've got leukemia.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then after that, while he was fighting it and while he was recovering and while he was doing all that, you guys do Loose Cannons.
Right.
And Rich has since passed away.
He did.
But he is, and I say this every time I talk about him, I'm in comedy. I've been in comedy for almost two decades. I know fantastically funny people. Rich Cronin is the funniest person that I have ever met.
And the greatest storyteller and obviously songwriter, performer, musician, friend. He was one of a kind. I'll be honest, I haven't talked about him a lot. It's upsetting to think about him and talk about him sometimes because I miss him so much. But yeah, the Loose Cannons record was a lot of fun. And it was, we must have recorded 40 songs to pick 11 because it was just so fun to keep making music. And we, at that time, we were recording them and getting them played on the radio the same day
right.
in Philadelphia on the Kid Chris show, which was like a pretty big Clear Channel station show down in Philly. And I don't know, did you come to the Loose Cannon show in Philadelphia?
Not only did I come to it, I filmed it.
Right.
And if you go on the internet
I forgot there was another show.
And if you go on the internet right now and search Loose Cannons, you can still see my supercut of Rich. Rich was so drunk on stage that he started, and it's just like, it's something that like really, the only person that like has even like a shared gene with Rich is my brother Mikey, where they get caught on something and they're like, it doesn't have to make sense to you. It makes sense to me, and it's happening.
Right.
He started doing an alarm sound with his mouth on stage.
During the show.
During the show, often during the middle of songs.
Let's set the scene. It's at this place, like the Electric Factory.
It's like the,
So there's thousands of people there.
Yeah.
And we've been played on the, they've been playing the Loose Cannons record on the radio there. So everybody knows all the words to these songs. And the big hit is a... I don't even want to sing it or say what the name of the song is. It doesn't apply anymore nowadays.
Was it big in Japan?
No.
What was it?
Also offensive.
Yeah. Fat Girls?
It was Fat Girls.
Yeah.
It was an ode. It was it was an ode. But yeah, so the kids all loved it. And Rich, just in the middle of the show, just shuts it down.
Yeah. He's going, rah, rah, and he has not prepped anybody there that this is his alarm. This means he needs a drink. But this is, but he just figures people will pick up on it because he has sounded the alarm. Right. And what could the alarm be for? So he's now sounding the alarm, and then he's going to give it was the emergency broadcast system.
Right. And then he sort of invented a song that went along with Vakatonic, Vakatonic.
And he goes, meow, meow. And the whole crowd would then look, and the fucking staff, and everybody goes, Vakatonic. Vakatonic, Vakatonic, Vakatonic.
They're running.
Vakatonic.
Just people just running to the bar for Vakatonic emergency.
Yeah. And the bartenders are making Vakatonics. Fans are getting in Vakatonics. And they'd come, and five of them would come on stage, and he'd quickly drink them all as you guys performed. Right. And then.
Loose Cannon shows were a riot.
And then two songs later, wow. And then people knew this alarm means Vakatonic. He needs another drink.
That was a great show. Were you at the show at the North Star in Philly?
No.
That was at the show. I think Kid Chris DJ'd that show. We blew that one out. That was crazy. Loose Cannon shows were unbelievable. So much fun. We played Boston. We played around. I would do that again.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I always talk about Rich, and it's like everybody wants to, you know, everybody, it's like the everybody that's ever been in a boy band except for Justin Timberlake is immediately dismissed. And it's like, this guy was not like any of those people.
No, no. He was self-aware.
Yeah.
He loved music. He loved people. He loved being a part of everything. He was the greatest.
He wrote fucking hits, dude. Like,
hits.
He wrote hits. Like,
hits.
You could, the one thing also
you
about
could
all those
some
bands.
Some of those Loose Cannon songs should have been hits. Yeah. But largely, obviously, because of his contribution. But he didn't make a song that wasn't catchy ever.
But all those other bands, they all had songwriters. And LFO had songwriters and all that. But the LFO was never anything until Rich nailed Abercrombie and Fitch and Summer Girls. Right.
And it was fun. We did used to perform that song with Loose Cannons, and everybody liked it. It was fun. People got involved and sang along with him, and it was great.
Now, I feel like it might have happened before this, but Supersize Me, was that was during the Supersize Toothpick days?
Was after the Toothpick record came out, I think, but during the Toothpick
time. Because you actually had to do, right? Did you have to do a re-release of the Toothpick record with Supersize Me on it?
We re-released the Toothpick record on a different label. So we sort of remixed it, added some songs, and we did add Supersize Me. We didn't play Supersize Me out. We didn't play it at shows. We didn't play it ever because it was a little goofier than I was really hoping to portray our project at the time.
Right.
But it was also just a good time.
So what happened was everybody has now seen Supersize Me. Supersize Me was the first of many documentaries by, Morgan Spurlock. And it was, this guy's going to go and he's going to eat McDonald's every day for however long.
Right.
And
so
what's that effect going to be on it?
This is a pretty funny story. So Morgan, a very talented guy, I believe his show used to be Bet You Will on MTV, where he would walk around or have someone walk around and say, I bet you eat these worms at the beach for $100 or something. Yeah. And then, so he was friends with our producers and he was friends with Sam, I think. So for whatever reason, he had this idea where he was in the studio one day while we were recording Toothpick stuff. He said, I got this great idea for this movie. I'm going to eat McDonald's for like 3 months or something and whatever. And we were like, you know what? Like, we're working here with these harebrained schemes already.
Yeah.
He was enthusiastic and he was going to make this movie. So he came and we, honestly, it probably took 11 minutes to write, record, and finalize the Supersize Me song. We did it in one quick minute and you can tell when you listen to it that it's just a long freestyle.
Who was there as a part of your life when you wrote that song, one thing that I know about Doug Ray at that time was you were sort of this couch surfing road warrior, like you're sort of in your parents' basement, but you're sort of in my couch and you're sort of in the city and you're like, you're never really somewhere for too long. But one thing was for sure, you're going to find a way to get to the gym and work out.
I did a lot of working out at the time.
5-6 days a week.
I did.
And before, after, and during the gym, you're going to pound protein.
Yep.
You're going to crush all kinds of food, nonstop, always needing food, needing food.
Trying to beat that Toothpick stigma.
Yeah, yeah. And I was a guy at the time. I was the definition of a starving artist. I couldn't even keep up. I was like, I can't afford to eat with you. And all you, like, we would sit around and you're like, I just want to pound burgers right now. I'm like, ate.
Yeah, the song is definitely in my speaking voice.
The song is in, basically, it's just your, this is like, hey, this is what I want to do right now because I haven't eaten in 2.5 hours.
Right.
Are you going to give us a taste?
Pretty much, yeah. Hold on, because you could stall for me a little bit more because this is certainly a Google job because this one.
So for those of you guys who don't know, the documentary Supersize Me became a massive hit.
I want to know who types up the lyrics to all these songs and puts them on the internet. Someone very patient because the songs are so ridiculous.
It was me, Doug. I did.
No, but like, isn't whoever's typing this get like halfway through and go, all right, this is just shenanigans. No, nobody needs to know.
And also having to rewind. And is he saying crush and pound? Is that what he's saying there?
I'm looking at what it says. It looks like it's pretty close. I'm going to give you one verse and a chorus. It goes forever. It's a 20-minute song. Now, that's actually one of the longest songs in the history, which was great because they played it in full during the movie. So when the movie went to theaters and everything else like that, I was like, oh, hey, good work. This is cool stuff. This is the kids love. Here we go. FAT, that is me, but I didn't used to be. I was hot, I was hungry, I was loose, I was free. Then I waited in the line for some burgers and some fries. Supersize, that'd be nice. Take a bite and close your eyes. Round two, what do? I can barely walk around. Jenny Craig, Richard Simmons, but I still love the pound. Hamburgers, Coca-Cola, getting gas from too much soda. Double, double, chunky, chunky. Hope this meal is never over. The world is round. And so am I, big boys, big girls with real big thighs. Supersize, supersize, the American way. Throw it down, throw it down all day, every day. Supersize, supersize the American way. Getting fat, getting broke, either way you're gonna pay. And then more. And then we just do that a lot. So just imagine all the rude things somebody might say.
Now,
yeah,
That song was, or I should say that movie was a big hit. These days, you got Bad Rollins, you got the Toothpick record, you got Super Size Me, which was on the movie.
They offered us a spot to play Super Size Me on the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
Yeah.
And I turned it down.
Because you didn't want to be known as the Super Size Me
guy? I didn't want to be known as the Super Size Me guy, which in hindsight was a bad call.
Right.
Not being known, end of sentence.
Right. Do you still get little baby checks in the mail all the time?
Yeah. I mean, that one actually worked out pretty good, I will say.
Yeah.
And credit to a team of people putting things together and getting it into a bunch of great, getting the movie out there. And then Miramax did a great job. So yeah, that one helped pay for law school. That
yeah.
was good.
So yeah, I'm glad you brought it up. The next move in the Doug Ray sort of story is
Joey's fault.
My fault. So I am a struggling comic turned production guy, and then I don't want to do production. And then I get to a point where I'm pretty committed to the comedy thing, but I need something. I need something to do during the day. It needs to be relatively low key.
Money, 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 money.
Yeah, I need to make some money, and I just need a situation. So the situation arises that your dad,
yep.
who works in White Plains,
yep.
has a law office where he does real estate law.
Yep.
And the job offer on the table is you can drive up to White Plains every day from Brooklyn in your 87 Cadillac.
I forgot DeVille. About the caddy. White interior.
White interior. Maroon with white interior, white leather interior.
Lots of debauchery.
You can drive up every day and you can be a legal assistant. You can redline leases for me. And I said, I know Mr. Ray, he's a great guy. He's probably going to buy me lunch a couple days a week. He's not going to bust my balls. I could be 15 minutes late. Probably can't be an hour late, but I could be 15 minutes late.
Yep.
He leaves pretty early.
Yep.
He loves me. I love him. This is a good thing. I'm going to go be a legal assistant for Ken Ray. So I start working in the law office. I forget how long I worked there. Maybe 6 months to a year.
Yeah, maybe a year. Wow.
Yeah, maybe a year.
Because I was on the road. I would call you there.
Yeah. That's right. Because you went back out and you had offered for me to come back out. And I was like, I got to make something. I have to be making some money.
That was the OAR tour.
Yep.
And then again, another tour with like Michael and some like Gavin DeGraw stuff.
So you're on the road.
And you were working for my dad. You missed some hilarious shenanigans,
I'm
man.
Sure, yeah.
Oh, my God. All right.
And then I tap out, and there was a moment where, like, he tried to hire my sister, and it didn't work, and you end up stepping in to my gig.
I was home between something or other. And we did go back and forth, I think, for a little while.
Yeah, there was like a little crossover.
I was home for like a month and a half, and I did it. And then you were home. I'd been doing like a comedy tour. You came back.
Yep.
And then
we go back and forth.
And then I ended up doing it for like a year because it wasn't bad. I got used to not having to be on the road, which meant like sleeping in a bed, showering in a place that's not scary, not living in hotels, sleeping at all, which was fun. You know, it was much more sober of a situation. So I was like, all right, I'll do this for a while. And I was hanging out with my dad, who I love. It was the greatest.
Who's basically for people who don't know, if you guys want to know about Ken Ray, a lot of you have probably seen him already. He is the judge in Joe Prano Takes the Stand.
Yeah, he's known
worldwide
for his
Ken
performance
Ray.
In the Joe Prano comedy special.
Yeah, I was so upset that we had to cut out one of his big lines.
But very funny comedy special, by the way.
Thank you.
I was there for the taping.
Yeah.
Both shows in Manhattan crushed it.
So you start working law, and then how long into that do you like? You decide to go to law school, but I have to imagine that part of the decision of going to law school, there's two decisions that happen simultaneously, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you decide you're going to go to law school, you in essence have to say, I'm kind of giving up on the music thing.
Well, sort of. Okay, so while I was filling in for you and then essentially just taking that job, I was working on music with Rich Nice.
Right.
So he was up in Boston, and I was dating a girl who is now my wife, who lived in Boston.
Yep.
And so I was up there a lot, and I thought, you know what? I could go to law school for a few years in Boston. I'll finish this record with Rich Nice, and I have tons of friends up in Boston. I love Boston. Rich Nice was there, which was kind of like having a family member
right.
there. And he had a house, and his brother had the house next door. And so I felt comfortable that I would be with, you know, with my folks. And it worked out actually pretty great because we made the Loose Cannons record. I went to law school, which was like jumping out of a moving car. Surprise. Law school is not super fun. Yeah, that was an experience.
So you go to law school. You went to law school up in Boston. You're up there a couple years.
Right. I moved up to Boston, up to Beacon Hill, right on the park. It was great. I had my girl up there. We were having a great time. I had tons of friends up there. It was the best. We played tons of shows. Just you can play a show every night in Boston
yeah.
because there's so many colleges, there's so many kids. Harper's Ferry, I think, was where I used to play a bunch up there. I don't know if it's still there. I think it is. We played Loose Cannon shows, yeah. toothpick shows, all type of shows.
Then you get out of law school, you graduate, you pass the bar, you come back down, and then you start lawyering.
And then I start lawyering, and honestly, that is sort of after law school was when I did actually stop playing music for a while. It wasn't during as much as after because Rich Nice passed away.
Yeah.
You know, and we had the band, and so obviously then the band was over. And I had no desire whatsoever to ever again make any music without Rich Nice. Because why would you? It's
just, yeah.
So I stepped away from music, not even consciously. I just couldn't even think about it and just dove all the way into being a lawyer. I was working with my dad at first for a few years. Now I came down and I'm working at a real estate company in the city.
And basically the book on music was closed until the calling of your... what will be your great second music career came, a phone call from Joe Prano, who says, you were born to be a podcast jingle maker.
Right.
And I said...
And by the way, I we haven't spoken about this, but I hadn't recorded a sound. During law school and after law school, before we lost Rich... I was working with Ari a lot from Ordinary People, Ari Goldstein, one of my best friends and very talented musician. We were writing a bunch of songs and we were going to put a record together a little bit and it all sort of stopped. But we had some great songs. I forgot what we were saying.
Then I called you up and I said,
right. So then we stepped.
I'm just going to send you a bunch of words.
Right. So Joe at this point has moved out to California.
In fact, Rich passed away within an... 2 weeks of me moving to California, 3 weeks of moving to California, and that was like, same thing. You know, it was like, holy shit. Like, it was, it's crazy, but it's like, that's a chapter of your life. Like,
yeah.
Boom. There was a time when I knew Rich, and then that chapter was over, and it's like, this is another, like, if you were writing a book, that would, it would be a different section.
He was that great.
Yeah.
And we were best friends when he became sick again, and it was obviously he was just the greatest. So, but anyway, it's tough, man. I still miss Rich so much. I haven't thought about him intentionally because it's just hard. I haven't spoken about him out loud much, but so Joe called and he's going to do a podcast.
Yeah,
and
my first podcast,
Kooks of Comedy.
Kooks Comedy.
I'm a big fan.
Now defunct
because of a wild shark attack incident.
amongst other things. Yeah, even less of an attack than the Mick Fanning attack. Rip Kooks.
So Joe was kind enough to invite me to write the jingle.
I said I need a jingle, and I know you know nothing about surfing. I'm going to write a bunch of shit down.
Not like I never saw Point Break.
Right, right. Not like you never saw Point Break. Not like you never saw Blue Crush.
Blue Crush, okay.
Blue Crush used to play at the 20th Street apartment pretty regularly. Pete and I both thought we were fighting over Kate Bosworth. Neither of us knew her.
That's like when I used to watch Gleaming the Cube, and I was positive I was going to be Tony Hawk when I grew up.
Yeah.
Didn't work out.
So, but I sent you, you know, Barrel and Paddle Out.
Like single words in a list.
Yeah, I just said, here's 25 surf phrases, ding. And here's a couple surf movies, ding. And whole,
still doing
the yeah, a whole thing. And you wrote what, you know, is popularly considered the greatest jingle in the history of podcasting.
Oh, thank you. I could only agree. I do actually like that song. And at first it was a 30-second song, which is all we're going to probably get today if I play it for you, because I don't remember the rest. But then we actually, people liked it.
People liked it. There was a request for a full version.
Right, they were like, "Why is this song so short?" So eventually, I finished the song. It's actually a good song. I agree. Myself,
will you give us? Will you give us a taste of just the Kooks jingle as it's commonly referred to?
This is the reintroduction for me, so this is a good one. I pick up my friends, paddle out, then we all hang 10. Get barreling, it's such a nice day out. And if you're dropping, you might get laid out. Blue Crush on a girl and I'm all about it. Point Break and I got all the hot beach talent. Now these kooks wanna ride with the big kids. Let them know that it goes down like this. We gonna catch some waves. We in the sun getting high all day. We gonna catch some waves. We on the run from the cops all day. We gonna catch some waves. Do you really wanna catch some waves? All right.
With the Kooks of Comedy.
Shout out to Lachlan.
So we did that jingle, and I'm gonna tell everybody this. If you heard a jingle prior to this podcast that you're listening to right now, we have not completed the new Joe Prano podcast.
Correct.
Jingle. But we, after
it's in the oven,
after recording this podcast, we're gonna try to finish the cooking. And if you heard Doug Ray's voice before that, that means right after this podcast that you're listening to right now, we have created what you've already heard.
Yes.
It's kind of a timeline, you know, fucking exciting situation. But
you guys are behind the curtain.
Yeah. So
and just sidebar.
Yeah.
If we write it and record it and it takes 11 minutes, it'll be great. If we labor over it for 3 hours, yeah, it's already bad.
Oh, an hour after we start, if it's not done, it's I'm going to kick you out. Yeah. And we'll reconvene.
Exactly.
We'll meet in chambers on Monday.
Perfect.
So now I say this selfishly, but I also like we have hinted at. Did that get the ball rolling on Doug Ray making music again?
One of the things that was
you're
really
welcome
cool,
everybody. You're
one
welcome.
One of the things
fans
that was very cool
everywhere
about it was that you guys honestly have a ton of fans, and I was pleasantly surprised, not surprised, but very happy to see what a strong, loyal following you have, because you guys were very positive towards my music. A lot of people online started sending messages, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Was it weird to play without Lachlan's record scratches on top of it?
Boy, he was a good comedian. He's handsome.
Yeah. Tall, handsome, good teeth, great
voice,
comedian.
Good surfer.
Yeah.
Post-surf etiquette, not so sure.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, and they were like, yo, where can we check out your stuff? And it's like kind of corny to be like, oh, hey, guys, thanks, great for checking it out. Here's this song from 10 years ago or, you know, 8 years ago. So I was like, man, I got to write some stuff. So right around that same time, my friend Pete, who used to be the bass player in my band, flew back from Florida to move back up to Maryland, which isn't that close, but close enough that we started getting the band back together with Blaze. We started playing. We were going to do a rock band or like something close to it. And I was also going to open for us acoustic and play Toothpick style, Kooks of Comedy style songs. So we started writing tons of songs, started reincorporating a lot of the songs that I wrote with Ari and rewriting them. And we put together a rock band. And I quickly realized that, why? Why be a little bit good at what people I know my everyday life can do so much better? Not just better, worse, but like I don't even want to listen to me doing this. Like, let's make a rap record. And coincidentally, because
let me cut you off. One thing that I will say, and I've said this to many people, and I've said it to many people because I've seen it in action. And I fucking listen to the hot 97s of the world, and I do whatever. And I've pushed you in this direction for years. It's going as far back as Toothpick.
Make a rap record.
Because I've seen it in person. I've seen it in battles. I've seen it high on the couch. I've seen it at Toothpick shows in between where somebody just demands it. I've seen it at your fucking wedding.
Yep.
I know you've talked about the kids on your playground that were more talented, but dude, you can freestyle.
Yeah.
You have always been able to freestyle. You've always been able to rap. You say something when you do it. Sometimes I feel like you break out the guitar and you're like, I got to talk about some sensitive emotional shit. And we're like, no one cares, dude. But when you rap, you fucking talk about some shit and you really nail it. And I've said it before, on many other podcasts I do, I put you up there. I'll go, I've heard the Eminems dropping freestyles on Sway. I've heard the fucking Jay-Z's. I know that they have ghostwriters. I'll throw fucking my boy Toothpick, and I'll go, in a straight-up battle situation, like, let's go.
I agree. And even though I'm not going to do a freestyle on this podcast,
yeah,
that's intentional. Come to a show, and I promise to do a freestyle. I have no idea what it will be about, or else it wouldn't be a freestyle. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah,
that actually means a lot to me.
And I remember
your rap fandom.
And now, before we get into the new Doug Ray album too much, but you do mention rapping at your wedding on the album.
I do.
Is that an actual reference to you rapping at your wedding?
Yeah, it's just true.
It was very well received by the patrons. Was it not well received by the family and the?
If you go back and watch it now, listen, it was a party.
It's the second greatest thing that happened at your wedding.
What was the first?
My brother.
Right. He's an incredible dancer, and based on his size, defies physics.
Yeah.
But that's another story.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically the subject was, we used to not be married, but now we are, and we're going to go upstairs and have sex soon.
Yeah.
And that's the whole song is basically about that.
Yeah.
Like, no one can do anything about it. I was like, but why? But also, in my mind at the time, I was like, everybody's wasted.
Yeah.
It's 2 a.m. I'll just do a rap. It was like 10:15.
Yeah.
Everybody was still there. I was wasted. My boys, everybody, my friends were wasted. The adults were just like, we're just at a normal wedding in Boston.
But it was also your wedding, so you could do whatever the fuck you want.
Also, no one's surprised. I mean,
yeah.
You know, we've all met. But yeah, it was a lot. But yeah.
Was there any blowback?
There were questions. Like, he uses the F word a lot. You know, it happens.
Yeah. So you decided to make a rap album.
So I decided to make a rap album. So in the process of playing the Rock Band with Pete and Blaze.
Now you're doing this, you're moonlighting. You're lawyering during the day.
Pete got a great job selling guitars in Maryland and was going to start doing that full time. And I was like, dude, you should do that. Now he's the most talented musician. He plays guitar, piano, drums, bass. You can't do it without him. And he played a lot of things on this new rap record, making beats together and working on stuff and writing. So it's going to be me and Blaze. And that was sort of perfect timing because I've always sort of wanted to do a live drummer rap with a track so it sounds like the record, but not have to have like a whole big band. It's much easier to get shows and it's very easy to listen to. And my friend Alex Sheridan, an extremely talented producer, who is actually a guy who I met because he just reached out at one point to me and Ari while we were working on songs. He was an Ordinary People's fan, and through Ari became a Toothpick fan, and just sent us an email and was like, hey, you know, like, I'm a fan, what's up? I make beats and stuff. And we were like, oh, you do? Cool. And then we moved on with our lives. And then we checked out his beats. This was back when Ari and I were making songs right after I came back from school. And we were like, yo, this is crazy. Like, these are the best beats ever. So Alex got back in touch. It'd been a few years. and was like, yo, I have some beats. He sent me some beats. And I was just like, I mean, this is like perfect because I'm just in the process of having Joe talk me into making a rap record, getting back into music. People are hitting me up. My friends are pushing me, encouraging me. And I have tons to say because I've been sort of storing up my batteries. And Alex just comes through with amazing beats, I think. And it's just such a talented producer, and we're so in sync. And honestly, it's as though Alex is the other person in the band for this record. We're just as important as anything I did, because it all we wrote it together, in the sense that I'm calling him all night, 3 a.m, 4 a.m. We made the record in 2 months, no sleep, didn't miss a day at work. Missed a few days at work.
Yeah.
I was sick, if you listen to this podcast. But we made the record, and Alex and I worked very hard on it, and I'm proud of it because I was, I think, a little bit more honest on this record than I am sometimes in the past. And I really just wanted to make a rap record, so that's what we did.
So I convinced you, but I think you always knew it was the right answer. But I convinced you, just be Doug Ray.
Yeah.
Stop it with
looking for band names.
Stop it with the Batman and the Bruce Wayne and the toothpick and the everything.
I think sometimes for me it's a little easier to almost hide behind a band name than just say, hey, I'm Doug Ray. Because because you can hide behind it, essentially.
Because I remember when you were a toothpick, the story was you got a root canal and you always had a toothpick in your mouth, but then you had to create some press thing about your skinny.
The true story was
your skinny track star when you were in high school and your friends.
I'll be honest.
I was like, you got a tooth problem, is what you got.
What happened was someone was really nice and punched me in my face and broke my tooth. It was a fight that I lost. So just any fight I've been in, and some guy knocked my tooth out. So I had like a dental situation, and it was just a constantly needed to like have a toothpick on hand to help deal with it. And people started like making fun of me, be like, hey, toothpick guy. And we went with it.
Yeah.
But that's a tough story to sell at the label. And
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I was the victim of a concocted story about, no, listen, I did do high school track. About it. I was blowing up on the track team with my brother. I was skinny as heck, but nobody called me toothpick.
Yeah.
Not once. To anybody I told this lie to, I apologize.
These are the things that happen on a podcast. It's so great, so raw, so real.
Look, it's not like this was like a big story that I ever had to tell more than... Yeah. This story was only told at like label meetings.
Yeah.
No one ever really asked.
Why toothpick?
Right.
So I convince you to do Doug Ray. I think it's the right answer. Now, before we actually get into the record, which I think is fantastic, I'm a big fan. It's start to finish, in my opinion, it's the best. And you know I'm very honest with you. You send me every song as it's being made. I feel like I'm a creative director on this.
Joe will, if I send a song to Joe that is not good, or in Joe's opinion not good, he doesn't go, I like the part here. No.
No.
No, it's not good.
Whack.
Yeah. So, which is, that's actually helpful.
And there are songs on, I'll say one thing about this record. There are songs on here I still don't like.
Okay.
Which is fine. But there's like two of them I still don't like. We won't talk about which ones they are. There's also songs on here that I initially didn't like, which now I think are fantastic. Milkman, I was like, don't put it on the record. Now it's one of my favorite songs.
Thanks, man. And Milkman is a song that I wrote in the car, on my steering wheel, on a napkin, on the way home from a Stephen Kellogg concert up in Massachusetts. Is Northampton in Massachusetts?
Yeah, I think so.
In Northampton, Massachusetts. And I wrote it because I played my show, and it was good, I thought. And then he played his show, and I loved his band. And I had this song stuck in my head when I was driving home, and it ended up being the Milkman song. So I called a girl that I knew who was a big Stephen Kellogg fan. She had been at the show. And I was like, what's the song that's like, I'm lost, I'm gone? I had this song stuck in my head. She was like, I promise you, that is not. I'm like, he didn't just play it at his show? So I was like, oh, I guess I just wrote that.
I'll play, what I'll do is this episode will go out on Milkman. So we'll play that we'll play that as the track that this song goes on. But it's a great example of just like, look, I'm not a music person at all. I'm just a music listener. Right. And I've always said, hey, man, I just like this connects with me and this doesn't. And like this, it is what it is. And that's one that like now I love. And at first I was like, I don't know. It's a little too toothpick. It's a little too like you're trying to be. You're it's trying
weird.
To say.
I like that song.
But now I love it.
Thanks, man. And I appreciate it. And I wrote it from the heart for whatever reason. And it was about like, you know, needing stuff.
In 2018, when you put out this record, and you call it Doug Ray, which thank God you did.
Yeah.
Just not for no other reason than you never once came up with a good band name. Passed on? Yeah, please.
Here's some of the names we passed on. Batman's Day Off.
Yep.
Space Baby.
Yeah. Toothpick 2?
No, toothpick was never really.
How about just a toothpick?
No.
The number 2?
We had some good ones. I can't remember any of them. They go downhill from there, believe it or not. And eventually, yeah, Joe and some other trustworthy friends were like, guy, just, yeah.
Just be Doug Ray already. Yeah. Now, in 2018, you call it Doug Ray.
Yep.
People have often thought Doug Ray is not even your real name.
It is.
Doug Ray is your name. Do you worry about what you say on a record that you put your name on while you have a life, while you have a career? Because even as a comedian, I have to be worried about what I put out.
Well,
even in a world where I go, everything I ever say that you've ever heard is a fucking joke, I still have to be worried about what right. I put out.
Well, first of all, I'm very lucky because I work in an organization which is unbelievable. I'm very lucky in my work and in my job, and everybody's free to pursue their own endeavors, and there's no judgment. But also, we're all adults, right? So there's some frank material on the record.
Yeah.
And the truth is, I used to live a different life, and so a lot of it is anecdotal. And not necessarily literal, obviously.
Right.
And no, I'm proud of it. I stand by all of it. So, and I've never said that after making another record before. So,
are there people around the office who've heard it? Do people like come up and talk about it?
There are. And there's obviously a song called "I Quit," right. which is all about how horrible my job is and how I want to quit. The good thing is, I work with the people I work with every day, and they know that I don't want to quit my job.
So right.
That's fine. But it was written about a job that I did want to quit. So it's the truth, true, obviously, but...
And I want you to play I Quit now.
Okay.
And here's why I want you to play
Quit. When you're playing, just real quick, we played the record release show in the city. Thank you, everybody, so much for coming out. We sold out. It was great. But when you're looking in the back and your boss is there and you're like, I'm going to quit my job, and you're thinking, but yeah, I'm not.
Yeah, please.
I'm like looking him in the eye, giving him the old, don't fire me.
The reason I want you to play I Quit of you know, I kind of look through all your tracks, and the reason I want you to play this is the same thing that I said about The High Life. When we were 23, and we won't incriminate you on anything, and I was doing a bunch of drugs, and I was going back to the Katona Bar and Grill.
What that stuff does to kids.
Yeah, and I was going back to the Katona Bar and Grill, and all I wanted to do was have sex with high school girls. It really spoke to a moment in time for me, and I was like, this truly, I always thought this could be a hit, because this is what my fucking life actually is.
At CBS?
Yeah, like, you know, being a post-college, you know, fucking, we weren't adults yet. We were still kids. We were still hanging on to the kid thing.
To this day, I will say this. Every single time my alarm goes off to wake me up in the morning, I cannot believe it's happening.
Yeah.
And my first thought every morning is, nope.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, but yeah.
But I think this sometimes about my comedy career, and this is why, and it takes me to your song here is, I used to do a lot of jokes about being 20-something and being a party guy and being whatever. And everybody always thought, this is Joe, you're going to be a big... People told me when I was 19, you're the next big thing. And now I'm 38, and I'm still not even a little bit of a thing.
That's not true.
But I think maybe in a way, I'm more suited to be this guy. Okay. To be the comedian who's 38, but still kind of dabbles in that life, and it's kind of fun. And like, look at his mustache. And like, I don't know if I trust him, or if I really like him, or if I really don't like him. And I think it really, you know, I found
You've made sacrifices too. Like, you have that big mustache, so you've sacrificed the ability to rent a van.
Right.
You can have the mustache, you can rent a van, you can't do both.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons.
But I think I've really found it, and I think the one thing about this song to me is, I haven't worked a real job in a long time, but I still think I know where I would be right now if I did have to go to the office. And just as much as The High Life spoke to me as a 23-year-old that just wanted to go back and fuck high school girls, this song speaks to me, and I think speaks to a lot of people who are like, you know, I'm working just so that I can get vacation days. It's literally why I work.
Right.
Is so I can have paid vacation.
Working to not work.
So give us all a little
you
bit
want
of
the whole thing, or you want a little piece?
Yeah, what you want to do the whole thing? You know the whole thing. This is the new record.
Right, I can play this one.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Don't forget to maybe throw in an I quit for me.
I'm trying to think how it starts. I shouldn't have stayed out so late. Nope.
Now, I should, while you figure it out, I should also say you were very upset I chose this song because you would normally play it with a capo, but right, you don't have a capo.
I'm making an adjustment, so I was about to play it wrong, so that's why I'm like, nope. So hold on, give me a second. There we go. I shouldn't have stayed out so late. I wonder how much coffee is it gonna take for me to stay awake. I really don't feel well. Left my boss see me sleeping, he could go to hell. Go tell him he can go ahead and fire me. I hope that nobody else is gonna hire me. Look at the irony, working just to not work. Now I'm wasting my time like clockwork. What's my life worth? I don't wanna go to work. I just wanna chill and play all day. Look him dead in the face and say, I wish I could just be still asleep while you work. While you work. And I could call in sick, but I just did. Get a doctor's note, they won't trust it. On the way to work with a long face. Tick-tock my life, damn what a waste. All day doing dirt for the boss man. This sucks, damn, gotta get a new plan. I know there's something way better for me out there. So I'm leaving with my stapler and my desk chair. Yeah, I'm out of here. I don't wanna go to work. It don't matter what you pay me. Cause lately it's making me go crazy. And I wish I could just be still asleep while you work. While you work, while you work. And I'm too fly for my suit and tie. And I'd rather die than work 9 to 5. And I'm too fly for my suit and tie. And I'd rather die than work 9 to 5. And that's why I quit. Come on, everybody, let's break some shit. I quit. Come on, everybody, let's take some shit. I quit. Come on, everybody, let's break some shit. I quit. Call up the next day and say, it feels so good to be still asleep while you work.
Doug Ray, I quit. I love it, dude.
Thanks, man.
You know, my question that we would wrap this up on
after says, I plug the record.
After what I was gonna say was, so you did Bad Ronald, and it's you're gonna be a fucking rock star.
Right.
And you did Toothpick, and you might be a rock star, right? And then you do Doug Ray, and you're like, I just need to say some shit while I'm lawyering.
Right.
And I was the question was going to be, so what is next? But I'm not even going to let you answer that, cuz I'm going to tell you what's next. The one that you don't think is going to make you a rock star is going to be the one that makes you a rock star. I'm putting the call out there to the fans of the Joe Prano podcast, to the fans of the Kooks of Comedy, rest in peace Kooks. Digital music is what's happening now. You can go on to Spotify. You can go on to Apple Music. You can go on everywhere.
iTunes.
It's on iTunes. It's Doug Ray, Doug The Ray. Night Shift. Here's what I'm doing. I want people calling radio stations. I want people downloading the record on Apple Store, iTunes accounts. Do everything you can. Listen to this record. Listen to this record. You're going to like it. I think you're going to love it. If you're 30-something, I think it's going to speak to you. And I'm gonna. This is the beginning. We're gonna get this. Right. I want to see this take off because I'm not sure that you deserved it before because, like you said, I think this is your most honest Doug Ray, and I think that that's the one that deserves to be showcased. And you had a lot of opportunities, and I just think it's a fantastic record.
I appreciate it, man. And I will say, part of me saying that I think it's a good record too, and part of the reason I'm comfortable saying that is because a lot of people worked on it. Ari did some great writing on it. Alex did amazing production. Pete played amazing instruments on it. We had a fantastic team that made the record, and people contributed their time and their studios and their mixing studios, and we wouldn't have been able to do it without that. So thank you.
I just think it's fantastic. I think my favorite part about this record is, I think, and the reason I'm having you on, because normally, you know, I don't need a guy who used to be a musician on my podcast. I feel like you are a musician because, you know, I'm terrible about writing jokes. Like, a lot of people sit down, they spend an hour a day writing. I got to write new stuff. I got to write. I do it more organically. I write stuff that I feel like I need to say. And I feel like the great thing about this record is, when I listen to it, I feel like it's all things, I know you very well, I feel like it's all things that you needed to get off your chest.
Yeah.
You needed to talk about. And to me, that's why more than any, and I love your music, but I think more than anything you've ever done, including the Kooks jingle, I think this is your best work.
Thanks, man.
And I want everybody out there who listens to this show, if you enjoyed any of the stuff that you heard Doug Ray play today, go on all the digital music things and download them all. Download Bad Ronald, download Toothpick, download Supersize Me. Go watch it all on the internet. But if I could say one thing, it's download, buy, stream, do whatever you can, the new Doug Ray Night Shift record, because I think it's fantastic. The Night Shift.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Where can people is that the best thing to send people? I know you're not big on Twitter. You're not a big social media guy.
iTunes. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I am on Twitter as @ToothpickHits, mostly to interact with the Kooks of Comedy and their fans. Yep. So reach out. Also playing lots of shows. Going to be putting more shows up. DougRayMusic.com is the website.
Great.
And we're going to keep playing shows. We're going to keep touring and keep making music.
Doug, I appreciate everything you've ever done for my podcasting intros. I appreciate all the time we've spent together. Appreciate being a part of Toothpick Music History on the road.
A very big part. And let me give a quick listen. Joe got me into the comedy scene, and I'm a huge comedy fan, especially live comedy and, you know, digital comedy.
Not to mention your one time actually performing stand-up comedy.
I tried stand-up comedy. It was a huge flop, so I have a tremendous amount of respect for stand-up comedians. But I love stand-up comedy, and I'm your biggest fan, so keep it up, man.
Thanks, buddy.
It's great.
And get the Doug Ray album. And, Doug, thank you for doing it.
No problem.
And we'll go out on Milkman.
Okay.
Enjoy, everybody.
The weatherman is lying to your face, but you already know you taste the rain. Hey weatherman, you made my summer fall, but you don't care about my plans at all. And he will drag you down. Oh no, so I say, I'm lost, I'm gone. Hey dope man, put me on. It feels so good, ease my pain. Well, I'm down, I'm out. Hey dope man, check me out. I only need enough for one more day. Well, the milkman says he cares about your bones, but he just wants to peek into your home. Hey, milkman, you don't care how tall I grow, 'cause you won't leave until you get your dough. and he will drag you down. So low, so low. So I say, I'm lost, I'm gone. Hey, dope man, put me on. It feels so good, ease my pain. Well, I'm down, I'm out. Hey, dope man, check me out. I only need enough for one more day. You go, hey, Jack, Jack in the box, Jack be quick. Jack blew up and Jack lost his shit. Should've kicked back, tried to relax, smoked a clip. But he hit the bottle, shot the H and found out that the policeman will put you in your grave. If you disobey a single word he say. It go, officer, not a chance. Officer, show your hands. Officer, let a man be a man. And drive on, and drive on, and drive on and on and on and on. And I'm lost, I'm gone. Hey, dope man, put me on. It feels so good, ease my pain. Well, I'm down, I'm out. Hey, dope man, check me out. I only need enough for one more day.
I had a long ride, turned the volume up high, and the time flew by so quick. I laughed out loud, that's what it's about. I really don't feel safe no more. And Joe stands out even in a big crowd, cause he drinks till he hits the flow. Hey Joe, it's time to stop the show. Pack it up and away we go.